Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life? 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
Guillermo Mash here, welcoming you to the April 18th edition of the Without a Roof radio program. You want to know more about Without a Roof? Google Without a Roof. We come right to the top. Hit us up. Homepage, WOAROOF.TUMBLR.COM. Great show today. We're leading with a conversation with Shahara Hyatt, director of the California Homeless Youth Project, around Assembly Bill 2247, followed by some amazingly joyful interviews with students and faculty at Chico Country Day's abandoned exhibition that was last Thursday. Stay tuned for that, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Guillermo Mash here for the April 18th edition of the Without a Roof radio program, and we have someone that's always good to hear on the airways and a common contributor to all things homeless youth in the state of California. We have Shahara Hyatt, the Executive Director, California Homeless Youth Project. Thanks for joining us today, Shahara Hyatt.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and I know you had some wonderful words to say around Kaylin's interview, so maybe start with that, and then I've got a little intro here I'm going
to
read.
Yeah, I just listened to the interview with Kaylin, who is absolutely amazing and sharing her experiences and doing advocacy with California Youth Connection, which, you know, for folks listening, they've got a really great reputation here at the Capitol for doing amazing advocacy work that's led by young people, and it's led by young people with lived experience in the foster care system. So I think so often in policymaking, we don't get to hear from the people that are most impacted, and they don't get to drive the narratives about what needs to change. So hearing Kaylin speak about her work with CYC and on this bill, AB 2247, was really incredible.
This is actually from someone with a lived experience. I'm going to lead this in, and then Shara's going to pick it up from there. But this is from a guest writer for the Chronicle of Social Change. And this is from Katarina Kabeck. And she has a lived experience, and she's active in this fight for the foster care system out of Alameda County. But she just has a wonderful excerpt here that just teased this up perfectly. Placement stability is a big issue for the more than 60,000 children placed in the state's foster care system. According to the 2018 California Children's Report Card, nearly 28% of children in foster care for 12 months or longer experienced three or more. That's three or more placement moves. Some foster youth experience more than that. I talked with one young person over the weekend who survived more than 50 placement changes. Many foster youth are familiar with the language of a seven-day notice, the document that announces a placement change, but there is no formal process in state law for how a placement change must occur. 7 days is not an adequate timetable for a transition to another placement. Some words around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, the bill is called creating a youth-centered process for stability in the foster care system. And I think that really says it all because it again speaks to, you know, needing to involve young people that are involved in this child welfare system in their own decision-making about where they're ending up and at least have more notice about what's happening. So one of the things that really struck me, you know, this would move it from a 7-day notice, it sounds like, to a 15-day notice and require them to notify the child and family teams before making a 7-day notice. And Kaylin really talked about the traumatic impact of being told you have 1 week to leave and, you know, whether you're able to tell your friends goodbye. You know, having fewer placements means more stability in terms of housing and school and your community. And all of those are really protective factors. So the more stability that you can have in keeping a young person in a safe space, then the stronger they'll be in other areas of their life. And another great point that Kaylin made was that, even when a landlord evicts you, you have like 30 to 60 days notice. So for a young person to be told you have 7 days to leave, that's really disempowering. I mean, and even a landlord eviction is incredibly disempowering, even with, you know, some more time. And so I really applaud CYC's efforts for listening to young people about the changes that should be made and what they see as the gaps in the system or the cracks in the system that they feel swept into, and how we can do a better job of supporting young people who are our responsibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think even for me, as now I have two adult children, I made some choices that was like, oh, my child's in this high school and I want to, you know, make sure I stay in this area or do this certain thing. Or if I'm going to be moving, I want to give them 6 months notice. So, I mean, people that are in a better situation financially and otherwise, that's usually first and foremost is not disrupting a child's life. So I just can't imagine the whole idea of someone knocking on your door or not. Like Kaylin had said in one of the incidents that happened to her, she was called into the office with her stuff in a box. You know, I can't even imagine how that experience felt for her.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're also trying in this bill to create a little bit more of an outlet so that young people have a place to talk about what's going on and what's going wrong. And so it sounds like they want to make it so youth can call a support line so that their, you know, voices and perspectives can be heard. And there's, you know, various types of these in the child welfare system right now, calling it the ombudsman or things like that. But specifically around placement and safety, it sounds like it'll help identify problematic resource parents. So, you know, if a young person is kind of calling repeatedly about the same homes, then that's something that the child welfare system can look into about, well, is this a safe placement if a lot of young people are having issues in this home? And all of that, again, is kind of tools for empowerment and for safety and stability for young people that unfortunately have had to end up within this system.
Folks, just tuning in to KZFR 90.1 FM, the Without a Roof radio program. We are speaking with Shahara Hyatt, director at the California Homeless Youth Project, based out of Sacramento. And we're having a conversation around AB 2247, a bill to make the foster care system more youth-centered. And it's a follow-up to a wonderful interview we aired yesterday, Monday the 16th, by Kaylin Jones, a local activist here at Chico State University who is part of California Youth Connection. Now back to the interview. Yeah, I think maybe we can end on a little few minutes around AB 2605, because we did talk at a fair length around the criminalization of foster youth within the system and the whole candy cane incident. So maybe give our folks that might be listening to Chico Country Day some understanding of how that plays out.
Yeah, so AB 2605, it's authored by Assemblymember Gibson, and it would create a 3-year moratorium on law enforcement calls by foster care facilities. So that basically means that for the next 3 years, you can't call law enforcement just for kind of simple behavioral issues. It needs to really be a criminal issue. I think this is a really important bill because we too often rely on law enforcement or criminal justice responses to social problems, and they're typically not very well equipped or trained on the developmental needs of young people or typical manifestations of trauma. So for a young person who's in congregate care or foster care facility, we know that they've probably experienced some type of trauma just being removed from their home, and whether that's abuse or neglect. And the way that manifests is often behavioral issues. So I think with this bill, we need to look at calling the police speaks to the lack of resources and training for staff as well. They need to be trained well, they need to be paid well, and they need to be supported to do the work that they do. And I've worked really directly with this community, and I've had a lot of friends that work in, you know, foster homes or group homes, and it's some of the hardest work out there, and unfortunately it's not compensated very well. So you get people sometimes with very limited training, and that's not always the case. There's a lot of people that are really, really fantastic, but in absence of the support, we see how staff may overly rely on law enforcement responses, and that can mean, you know, an unfair power struggle occurring, right? Like when an officer shows up, they're an authority, and young people can get hurt or get arrested and just be unfairly maligned for activities that are normal behavior for a young person, you know, for rebellion or for conflict. That those are things that happen in a family home, oftentimes without the police being called. So these young people should have the same access to privacy, safety, and liberty.
All right. I was in an interview with Shahara Hyatt from the California Homeless Youth Project around several bills that are in legislative process here in the state of California around the foster care system. And the best way to find out about those is Google AB2247 or AB2605 and learn more. Coming up next is a wonderful opportunity to hear from some eighth grade students of Chico Country Day School on their eighth grade class project, Abandoned, here on People Power Radio. So I'm here with Mary Jean's son. Mary Jean's an English teacher here at Chico Country Day and was instrumental in this whole Abandoned project. So tell our listeners your name and how much you're enjoying this Abandoned project exhibition.
Well, my name's Ben, and everybody's really creative with their ideas, and I hope this can just come really big.
Thank you for that, Ben. So why don't you start with your names?
My name is Nicholas Moore-Bodinger.
My name is Noah Dunkley.
Noah, thank you for doing this. Tell us what we need to know about this project.
So for our project, we created drawstring backpacks to help the homeless by, like, storing their personal belongings so they don't, like, get it messy and, like, don't have to, like, steal shopping carts, because that ends up costing a lot for the stores. And so we used a sewing machine over here, and she sewed it together here. None of us knew how to sew, but we tried, and we did well.
What would you add to what he said?
The backpacks were really fun to make. I didn't really get to sew anything. It was mostly Heather over there that sewed them. But it was really fun to work with everybody in here. I mean, really fun.
What are you going to do with them? There's 12 of them. How are you going to distribute them?
So we're going to donate them to the tourist shelter, where they will distribute them all over to other homeless people.
I'm here with the project leads for the backpack tent, and why don't you introduce yourselves and welcome to KZFR and the Homeward Street Journal.
Hi, I'm Grace Gomersall.
And I'm Marcus Funk.
All right, nice to meet you guys. Explain how you built these backpack tents.
Well, first we just kind of started to figure out the idea from last year. There was a girl who had something kind of similar. It was a tent that actually was folded into a backpack, like it turned into a backpack. So we thought that it would be really cool to do something like that, but we wouldn't have enough time to do exactly what she did. So we decided to get a tent and a couple of tarps and make it so that the tarps could make a tent and then be able to fold it into the backpack for easy use, and so they can move around when they have to. We thought that if it was light enough, you know, it would be easier for them to carry around and not so heavy that they would have to be, like, kind of leaning back and adjusting all the straps.
What were some of the technical hurdles you overcame in this project?
Well, we had to completely change up our design, and so, like, we had already put everything together before we had to change it up, so we just had to go with it. We had to sew those two tarps together, even though originally they weren't exactly, so we had to hand sew them, so that took a long time.
Is this first time you've ever done a project with thread?
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, probably, yeah. I've never really tried to sew something together before, so I had to learn, like, the night before I went to sew all this in, and it was just kind of like me working at it and getting stabbed in the hand a lot by the needle.
It's kind of interesting, being the age I am, almost 60s. You know, back when I was your age, we sewed our clothes because clothes were so expensive. You know, you had little sewing kits and stuff. Any closing comments?
That I just really hope that this can be mass produced and be able to help the homeless and give them hope for that they can get an actual home one day, because this isn't really a permanent shelter.
I'm here with the box cart crew, and I'll just kind of go around. We got four people that were on the project, two of them that were on the radio and two that weren't. And we're going to interview the folks that weren't.
Hi, I'm Riley.
Hi, I'm Jotun.
Hi, I'm Aaliyah.
I'm Eli.
Thank you, Eli. Let's start with you. What did you learn doing this project?
Well, we learned a lot. First, we started with a huge essay to kind of, like, explain what we learned about in the beginning. And then we had to start on the project for a product that would help the homeless in some way. And so we got into groups, and Riley had the idea to make a cart, because homeless people have shopping carts, they use them, so why not make a better version of it? So we did that, and I'm really proud of it.
This came out nice. How many prototypes did you have to go through? How many different, like, versions before you said, this is it, let's start hammering nails?
Actually, this was the first one. We just went with it, and we're like, all right, this is it.
So what did you learn along the way?
I learned to be more empathetic, because this project's really taught me how to be nice towards others. And since we're helping the homeless, you know, we're going to give this away and be nice to a person that needs help.
What are you going to do with this thing? You going to donate to someone? You get that figured out yet? Or
I'm not sure, but we might, together as a group, decide what to do with it later. But I do think we will donate it.
All right, thanks, guys. That was perfect. All right, so here we are with the shelter cart.
Hi, I'm Gavin.
Hi, I'm Tanner Parker.
I'm Sophie Sims.
I'm Lucas.
So how did you make it?
So we made it out of PVC pipe and plywood from the tiny house that another group is using. And we also used the tarp to make sure the homeless people don't get cold because of the rain, because the deadliest thing to homeless people is hypothermia. And we're also working with a couple other groups for sleeping bags and pillows and all that to make it super comfortable and super warm. It's also mobile, so the homeless people in Chico don't get in trouble for encampment, and they can move it around town wherever they feel like they need to go.
So what were some of the challenges you overcame in this project? Tell us a couple of those.
So I would say the biggest challenge we had to deal with was the supplies, because a lot of money went to the tiny house, and our inspiration is this cart right here, and this one's made all out of wood, but we couldn't afford to get all wood, so we kind of just took our budget and then got the supplies that we could make something kind of like it that would still be functional, just not as expensive.
Kind of what someone that has no money, that's poor, that's homeless would have to do, right? They'd have to figure out what they got and build some shelter. What would you say around that, the whole idea of, you know, trying to build shelter with not enough money?
Well, I mean, that would be very tough for you. I mean, you can't really do much out there in the, like, streets because you don't have all the supplies you need. You need to be able to have the money to buy the supplies that you need to create a shelter around you so you can block out the weather and not get sick.
Just like Lucas said, if someone is trying to make a shelter out of anything, it's most likely not going to be transport, easy to transport, so you'll get caught for encampment. So since this has wheels, you could transport it anywhere around. So,
you guys got plans on what you're going to do with it? Are you going to donate it? Or
we're probably going to give it to a shelter that would hand it out to a homeless individual. So,
thanks, guys. That was fun.
Thank you. My name is David Eubanks. I'm a science teacher here at Chico Country Day School. My role in this was helping the kids engineer the projects. I had a big influence on the tiny house. Super proud of these kids. While I had to make a few cuts, do a few things, for the most part, the tiny house is completely student-built. They ran the nail guns, they ran the power saws, they did all the measuring, they set the window, they helped me set the door, did all the trim work today. We're going to paint it and shingle it next week, actually over the course of the next 2 weeks. But yes, I was just extremely, not just proud, but impressed with how the students stepped up to the plate for their projects. These are not easy projects to pull off. These aren't cookie cutter projects that you would see in a normal eighth grade classroom. These are high level, high end manufacturing skills that the kids had to pull together in order to pull off their projects. And so to me, it's just uber impressive.
And planning too, because the students I had interviewed that were part of the team talked about how they did the budgeting and figured out, you know, what they could buy and, you know, kind of put the whole plan together. What would you say around that?
The week before we really got into fabrication, I basically told the kids that they needed to find every single thing that they needed. They needed to give me the source to find it, how much it cost, if there was like an item number, if it was online, they had to put it all together. Because I had to go out and buy it, and I needed to get the requisition sheets into the school to get paid back, and I didn't want to do all that work. So I asked the kids to do it on those sheets, and they pulled it off brilliantly. It was really amazing, just the whole planning, not just the finance, but I gave them budgets. Some of them went over budget, so they had to regroup and think about the products that they were using or the materials they were using to make their products. And kind of some of the ingenuity that had to go into that was quite impressive.
It seemed like there was a budget for the whole project. And it was a really kind of a cute interview I did with the cart tent people. They were like, well, the budget for the tiny house was so big that we had to kind of change our budget around to make this work. And I kind of led the conversation going, that's kind of how it works if you have no house and you're trying to find shelter.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Another thing, too, is while the tiny house did pull in a lot of the money, a lot of our scraps went into the other projects, to where some of the groups, like that cart group, had forgot to buy wood. And so they piggybacked off of the tiny house people to get some of their scraps, which is really nice because it reduced our amount of waste from the tiny house.
This is something you've done and had a passion for in another life, building, right? You're a builder?
Yeah, so I've built several homes, custom homes around Chico over the past 15 years. And while teaching has let me bring some of my skills in at a small level, with smaller projects, this was really awesome because I was able to transfer some of my higher end skills to the students, and I don't think that this is something that you would normally get at an eighth grade project or classroom.
Thank you for that.
You're so welcome.
Kenna, nice to see you again, Kenna. What did you learn from this project? What did you take away?
I did, my essay was on housing, and I learned so much about how many homeless people we have in Chico here. I read on an article about how there's all these big cities all over the north coast of California, and Chico is in one of the top seven, even though we're such a small town. And nationwide, California has 1/4 of the homeless population of the country, which is a really large amount just for one state out of the 50 states we have. So I just learned a lot about that from my essay that we wrote. I learned about how the city of Chico doesn't allow the homeless people to stay. That's why we couldn't make a cardboard house, because they wouldn't be able to take it into shelters and they wouldn't be able to move it around, so it'd be illegal.
Like the no camping ordinance, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's it.
Did you end up getting any reasons why Chico is, there's a fair amount of people that are homeless in Chico or stop in Chico?
A lot of it is weather, because in other places it can get really cold, and that's the homeless's biggest fear, which is why we wanted to keep them off of the ground with these mats. It does get really hot here, but that's better than being super duper cold, because then they can go into ERs for getting hypothermia, and that's just, then it just keeps on recycling that process.
Did you look at some of the point in time data, the stuff from the continuum of care HUD on the homeless surveys, how many people are in the county?
Yes, and the majority are males.
What's fascinating about the data is fully 80% of the people are from Chico, and they do the survey in the winter. So a lot of people get anxious about quote unquote people that are traveling through Chico, but they tend to do that during the warm weather, May through October. And they literally don't stay here. They're gonna stay here a day or two or a week, but they're typically traveling north in the summer and south in the winter. Did you happen to talk to anyone that was familiar with that, or?
Well, my essay was actually about chronic homelessness, which is being homeless for like over a year, or being homeless for 4 times in the past 3 months. So I did more about the long-term homelessness over the like passing through.
Thank you, Kenna. All right, Maggie and Peter. Maggie, what would you like to tell our listening audience about this wonderful mat project that you did?
So I thought just about homeless people sleeping on the streets, and it's uncomfortable. And so, like, I like to sleep a lot, so I thought of, like, you know, how to make it more comfortable so people can get good rest. And then Peter gave me an idea of the yoga mats and, like, the foam and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So you got, a custom yoga mat. We'll take a picture of this. But maybe you can take it from there, the artistic designer of this mat.
So earlier in the year, I had a very, very minor tailbone injury, and I just know how it feels to have, you know, your back all messed up and everything all wonky. So really, I mean, and Kenna was the original driver and the idea of the project, but I just know how hard it can be to just have a bad back. And a lot of homeless people, if they do come out of homelessness, they get a lot of labor-inducing jobs. So for me, part of the motivation was just ensuring that these people have better backs and better, I guess, probability of getting a good job and something that they can really do well. And then the idea for the mat actually was I wanted to take something that our school already had, which was yoga mats. So I took 2 yoga mats, I put under carpet foam in the middle, and then we closed the edges with duct tape, and then Kenna made a cover over it. And so it's really simple design, really easy to recreate, and really helpful for people who need it.
Thanks, guys.
Our project is Project Abandoned. We made Super Soap, and I am Riley. We made all-natural soap that adapts to all skin types, lasts longer than the average bar, and consumes less water usage. We wanted it to especially be sensitive on a child's skin, because 25% of the homeless population is children under the age of 5, and that's for over 481,000 just in the U.S. alone, and it's so much worse in places like Italy, India, and China. And so by having this soap and buying it and just putting out something like this to the community, it makes all the change in keeping the children and the adults of our homeless population as healthy as we can keep them. I think this project is amazing, and not only with our soap and with everyone else's projects, it's making some of the biggest changes I think Chico has ever seen.
It's all homemade and it's all organic. It smells great. How can people get these? Are you going to be selling them here at school? Or?
So we sold all of them. except for one which you just bought.
Nice.
And
I got the last one?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so the rest are being donated to the Torres shelter in the Jesus Center, and some of them are being put in the survival bags that another group made and put out to the homeless. They will be accessible as long as people are able to get them at the shelters. The money that we raised, we're using it to buy tear-free soap and shampoo for babies, just to make it easier to clean and, you know, not hurt their eyes. And we made a lot of money tonight. I think that it's made a huge impact.
It has, and it's just wonderful to talk to you around this topic, and thanks for all that you did, and thanks for coming on KZFR.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Savannah.
I'm Parker.
All right, Parker, let's start with you. Tell us what we need to know about this project, this tiny house project here for Chico Country Day 8th grade class project.
All right, so we had a criteria we were supposed to follow for how to build our tiny house, you know, to help out the homeless. And so we had this criteria on, like, how big the house is supposed to be. And with this criteria, we just followed and had ideas from pictures we've seen and what we've heard about it, and we built our tiny house. So we would cut out all our, like, wooden stuff with our measurements that we would get help from our teacher, Mr. Eubanks. And it was lots of fun. We ended up getting a lot of measurements, and we got some donations from Home Depot. It's really great.
What are the dimensions?
We have a page right here.
Oh, wow, you got a whole thing down here with a floor and everything. I'll take a picture of that. What about you?
Well, what I can say is that it was a very big experience because I've never done something like this. We are donating it to a Simplicity Village happening in Chico for a chat. Our house is going to be the first one on there that I know. We had a budget for $3,000, and yeah, it was a really big experience.
Thank you, guys. So I'm here with the mobile sleeping bag with pillow team, and I'm going to start here with you and give us your name. And
Kira.
I'm Thomas.
I'm Mia, MIA.
Well, start with you, Thomas. Tell us about your project, man.
So we did an insulated and waterproof sleeping bag that comes with a pillow attachment. And pretty much it has emergency foil blankets as the interior, which are what marathon runners use to keep themselves warm after a marathon so they don't get cold and don't catch a sickness. And so it reflects your body heat back at you, which is really interesting.
Is it geared towards, like, cold climate? And what kind of testing have you guys done? Have any of you slept in this?
Me and my friend actually did sleep in it a little bit. We were, like, in a class period, and we just decided to, like, test it out. And it actually kept both of us really warm. And I would say it's kind of for more, like, cold days, like, maybe even snow. We don't know because we don't live in snow. But it definitely could be used for rain and, like, cloudy days. And in the summer even, because they could use it as a cushion, because it is a little bit of a cushion. They could use, like, a light blanket even. So, yeah.
What would you have to add to the conversation?
Well, we used a tarp on the outside to make it insulated. And the entire thing folds up into a pocket on the outside of the pillow. And it was pretty difficult, but it turned out better than I ever imagined that it would.
Nice when something turns out better than you ever imagined.
Yeah,
that's how my kids turned out, right? My kids are older. Any final comments?
We're happy we did it, and it's really cool, I think, that we were able to actually make a sleeping bag that was warm and worked.
Cool, and you look really excited about it, as you should be. Is this guy a good teacher? He says he's a good teacher. He teaches a lot. That's the definition of good, is teaching a lot. What do you think, Thomas? What do you think about this exhibition? I'm really liking it.
Just super proud of all the students.
Yeah.
They've done an amazing job, and it kind of speaks for itself. The whole idea was empathy, and for them to be able to put what we do at our school, project-based learning, and to be able to put it into the community and see the difference that they can make, that's what it's all about. So it's awesome.
You know, that's what I said to Mary Jean, you know, for the radio audience, not the TV. I said, I can see the proudness on the students' faces, and there's nothing better than that, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing. It just shows you, you know, what kids can do. I mean, they're not at the age yet where adults have told them their whole life they can't do things, right? They think outside of the box. They think creatively. They think critically. And they do these things that you look back and you're like, how did you do this? And they, you know, they do it with a smile on their face. It's inspiring.
Thanks, Thomas. Guillermo Mash heading on out. Thank you for listening to the Without a Roof radio program. If you like what you heard, and I know you did,
head on out, kzfr.org, and hit the tip jar. Speaking of tip jar, massive thank you to every contributor, donor, sponsor that helped us exceed our spring pledge drive goal of 50,000. Next up, Non-Human Radio, right here on